This is Lars. Thanks again for checking out my podcast. Enjoy your day and the show, and let's make America great again.
Would you like 2023 to be tax-free? Hey, it's Lars. Then make plans to join David Moore for a free webinar Wednesday, March 29th at 10 a.m. Pacific time for the latest 1031 exchange news and updates. For those asking for the nitty-gritty of a 1031 exchange, this is your class to learn the basics of the 1031 exchange, what qualifies, and how to apply the process. In this webinar, you'll learn the lingo, a glossary of terms, what you should know about doing an exchange in 2023, the benefits and pitfalls, and flipping with a 1031 exchange. If you're an Oregon broker, this 1031 exchange class provides attendees with 1 hour of core real estate continuing education and the knowledge to identify and apply the 1031 exchange to client investment real estate transactions. Plus, anybody who signs up gets a copy of the slides and a link to view the session again. For more information and registration, go to 1031exchange.com. You've worked hard to earn your money. Equity Advantage works hard to keep it yours. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday on the Radio Northwest Network, and your calls are always welcome. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. I'll get to the Twitter poll here in just a moment. Because it has to do with what's going on down in Salem. I want to start today by talking about what's been going on in Olympia to try to fix a major problem. When you pass a law that essentially tells all police in the state, when the bad guys run from the scene of the crime, you are in large part not allowed to chase them. Well, now the legislature in Olympia says we've fixed the problem. We've passed Senate Bill 5352. The only problem is already the Seattle PD has said, okay, under this law, and I believe they're not trying to tie their own hands, under this law, SPD officers are only allowed to engage in pursuit if the officer has been both trained in what's called EVOC, or Emergency Vehicle Operator Course, and the pursuit intervention technique, which all of us know about, the so-called PIT technique. And we know how that works. At least I know how it works on paper. I've never actually done it in a car. Sounds like it'd be interesting. Better wear a helmet. But when the SPD says we're only going to let those officers who've completed both of those training courses actually pursue suspects in that case, and then you say, well, aren't all officers trained in both of those things? Well, it turns out that at least one source is telling us, and I have to credit my friend Ari Hoffman, who is a talk show host in Seattle. He's a great investigative reporter for the Post-Millennial as well. And Ari alerted me, according to a source, only the SWAT guys have this training. Not every officer does. So if the legislature in Olympia says, we've fixed the problem, now the cops can chase the bad guys again. When Seattle PD looks at that law and says, hey, under the limitations of this law, we're only going to allow those pursuits if they've had both the EVOC and the PIT training. If they have not had both kinds of training, you can't chase. Well, then we're right back where we started from. Remember how over the last 2 years, we've documented the fact there have actually been criminals running from the cops, and they have their girlfriend get on the cell phone and call 911 and say, tell the cops to stop chasing. You guys don't have the legal authority to chase us. I mean, it's really that bad. When the bad guys are telling the good guys, you're not allowed to chase me, you know there's something seriously screwed up. And the seriously screwed up in this case in Washington, just like in Oregon, is the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party that says, we don't want the police to chase criminals. We don't want them to arrest criminals. We don't want the prosecutors to prosecute criminals. We don't want the judges to take the convicted criminals and send them to prison. And we want the governor, as both governors of both states have done, to turn loose as many convicted criminals as possible so they can go back to the community and wreak more havoc on the communities in Oregon and Washington. If that makes sense to any of you, I'd be glad to take a naysayer call on it. Does it really make sense to let the bad guys run? I don't think it does. Anyway, welcome to Conspiracy Theory Thursday. If you want to jump into what I call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And as always, if you're a naysayer, especially on Conspiracy Theory Thursday, if you don't agree with my point of view, you are more than welcome. We will put you right to the head of the list, the phone line, and you can jump on the show and correct me on all the things you want to correct me on. But have your wits about you, bring some facts with you, and be prepared to answer a couple of questions. Our Twitter poll today, now this goes to Oregon, because in Oregon, every single statewide office in the state, statewide elected office, like governor, secretary of state, treasurer, Bureau of Labor and Industries, all of them filled with Democrats. Well, with one exception, because Shamia Fagan has announced that in about 4 days, her resignation from office in disgrace is going to come into effect. And believe me, we're taking a look and watching for the latest developments in that regard, because she'll be replaced probably with somebody who's just as bad or worse. And we are finding out more things about Shamia Fagan, because Shamia Fagan, Secretary of State, she sought that job. And when she got it, she already knew it wasn't enough to pay her bills. So she had to allow for a side scam to be arranged. And she did. She was making $6,500 a month as Secretary of State. She got $10,000 a month from one of the biggest weed retailers in Oregon, a chain of retail stores called La Mota, which translates as the weed. Well, it turns out the owners of La Mota, for the last, few weeks since Willamette Week and Sophie Peel broke that story, I've been telling you that the weed chain, they were making so much money that Rosa Casares, one of the two owners, complained, "We're making so much money, I don't know what to do with it. I got to tell you something. You know what they weren't doing with it? They weren't paying their taxes. They're now facing $7 million in tax liens. A couple of weeks ago, we had information that indicated it was $3 million in tax liens. Every business in America could say they were making a ton of money as long as they're not paying their state and federal taxes or their weed fees for the licenses they held. And if you wonder, well, why would the state of Oregon keep giving licenses to a couple of people who are in dire straits with not just the IRS, but the Oregon Department of Revenue and even the Cannabis Board, who they owed $600,000 to? Why would they keep on getting money? Why would they keep getting licenses, I should say? Well, the reason is, they're giving a lot of money to Democrats. They gave a lot of money to Val Hoyle. She became a U.S. member of Congress, and she hasn't explained the fact that she steered state contracts to the owners of La Mota, not for the weed business, but for other things like employee training. We talked about that scam yesterday. And then you had Shamia Fagan pulling down $10,000 a month. And for what? She called it minimal work. Guess what minimal is? 15 to 20 hours a week. Now, for those of you who are small employers like I am, if you've got an employee and you're paying them for their 40 hours a week, you kind of expect that, you know, since they need to sleep 8 hours a day and they got to shave and shower and do all the other stuff and eat, that 40 hours a week, that's working full time. But she was apparently almost working full time for La Mota. But when reporters asked her about it, she said, "Oh, I spent minimal time." No, you know what she spent minimal time at? Minimal time on the job. Apparently, and again, according to Willamette Week and to some extent the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper, it turns out Shamia Fagan was taking lots of trips out of town, going to big confabs here and there, and we'll have to find out whether or not she mixed any of her state-paid travel up with some of her private business work on behalf of La Mota. That would be more theft by deception. And we're going to have to wait and see whether or not Oregon is going to actually do a criminal investigation of Rosa Casares and Mr. Mitchell, her business partner, apparently, and significant other as well. Because if they won't do it, we're going to have to demand why. Why won't you look at it? Now, am I convicting her of the crimes that I mentioned yesterday and the day before? No, I'm not. I'm merely saying there appears to have been bribery. There appears to have been theft by deception. There appears to have been misconduct in office. And the Attorney General of Oregon doesn't have the power to bring criminal charges. But if they actually appoint a special prosecutor, he or she can investigate. And if she's not guilty and there's no probable cause there, I'll be happy to see no indictment. But if she is guilty, I expect to see both of those or at least Shamia Fagan be indicted. The Northwest Nonsense is next on the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say. This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Well, Democrats accuse Republican lawmakers in Salem of not doing their jobs by not showing up at the legislature. That denies the majority Democrats a quorum, and that means they can't pass new laws. In my opinion, Republicans are precisely doing their jobs by stopping bad laws that actually violate the law. The rules say that all legislation passed in Oregon must be easy for citizens to understand. Democrats are trying to pass legislation you'd practically need a PhD to comprehend. For example, Democrats propose to protect what they euphemistically call reproductive health care. When critics asked a Capitol lawyer, would this let a 10-year-old girl get an abortion without her parents' knowledge or permission? And the lawyer said yes, even the Democrat sponsors who wrote the bill gasped. They simply didn't know. It also lets the government provide chemical castration for teenage boys and puberty blockers for children without the parents knowing. Now, that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about, and that's why Republicans walked out. When so-called lawmakers who actually write the laws can't even understand what's in the laws they wrote, you know, the average person, including me, doesn't have a snowball's chance of understanding what they're passing as law. Democrats can whine all they want about this walkout, but the Republicans who shut down this nonsense are doing exactly what the voters elected them to do. And on that note, before I get to the Daily Grill, let me tell you today's Twitter poll, because I'll offer it to you as a choice. Should Republican lawmakers come back to Salem and pass anything the Democrats want? Now you say, well, Lars, that's kind of extreme. Anything they want? Well, let me point out to you, in both houses of the legislature, there are super majorities for the Democrats. That means they can literally pass anything the Democrats want. So if the Republicans leave, they can't pass anything at all. That's the quorum rule that applies to all bodies that operate under Robert's Rules of Order or similar rules. In other words, it applies to your county commission, city council, to the state legislature, to the U.S. Congress. It applies everywhere. In every governing body in America, I think without exception, there isn't a single place where you can get a non-quorum, a tiny number of people together. Otherwise, you could have two folks show up on the floor of the House of Representatives when the other 433 of them are gone and say, let's pass a bill. We're the only two votes in the building. They can't do that because you have to have a quorum. The Republicans have done the same thing in Salem. They said, if we're not there, they can't pass anything. And since they won't cooperate with us, they won't listen to us, they won't pass bills that actually meet the rules that were passed by Democrats that say, if we're going to pass a bill, it has to be understandable by the average person. The Democrats don't even understand the bills that they themselves write. So in that case, should Republican lawmakers come back to Salem and pass anything the Democrats want? I would answer no. You're free to answer any way you like at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. And by the way, on that note, I want to make a special invitation to naysayers. If you want to call in and dispute anything I've said, I had a couple of people on social media say, Lars, aren't you in favor of democracy? I said, well, some democracy, yes, but we're not a democracy. We're a representative form of government, a republic. Does it have elements of democracy in it? Yes. But are we represented by our direct votes? For the most part, no. Are we represented by representatives that we choose? Yes, we are. And unless we change that to direct democracy, and if we do, if we change that to direct democracy, well, I've got a list of things that I'd love to see put to a public vote in Oregon and in Washington. I mean, can you imagine what that list would be? I'd put the death penalty up for a vote. I think it'd win. We'd put highway tolling up for a vote. I think it'd lose. We'd put abortion up for a vote. I think that'd lose. We'd put up transgender nonsense and chemical castration up for a vote. I think that'd lose. Gay marriage did lose not too many years ago in Oregon before the Supreme Court forced it on every state in America. And how about every single tax increase they want to push through in Salem? How about we put all those to a vote? Anybody who's bemoaning that it's not democratic for the Republicans not to show up? Yes, it is. We're in a representative form of government, and they are accurately representing their districts. And if they're not, the voters in those districts are free to throw them out. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Better Basements and Waterproofing. Water in your crawl space or basement? Call Better Basements and Waterproofing.
Today's Daily Grill, I'm going to award to the idiots in transportation in both Oregon and Washington who've decided to self-sabotage or deep six a brand new bridge over the Columbia River. They've envisioned it for 20 years. It hasn't happened. They made one effort that cost $200 million and didn't go anywhere. But they have insane demands to include light rail, a bridge that's too low, a bridge that's too expensive, and base it on tolling that even the new governor of Oregon has kicked down the road about 3 or 4 years, if it happens then. And then you've got the knuckleheads who say, we want a different kind of bridge, like the Sierra Club, Thousand Friends of Oregon, environmental groups. They want a slimmed down bridge or even a light rail only bridge, forcing you out of your car and onto transit. Anybody who's backing that nonsense, I'd love to talk to you. Our best email so far today, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Hey, Lars, I heard on the radio this morning car insurance is going up, says Randy. Not sure if it's the huge increase in unsolved and unpunished auto thefts, or maybe the increase in uninsured motorists, or maybe the fact that new cars are so expensive due to technology and safety improvements, and there's no such thing as a slightly damaged car anymore. Rental cars are being rented longer as repairs are taking longer due to diminished workforce in service industries. Thank goodness we have electric cars to save us and the planet, signed Randy Lawrence at Golden Hawk Firearms Training. Randy, thanks for that email. By the way, you can send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com and vote in our Twitter poll. I'd really like to know what you think. Should we just tell the Republicans in Salem, in this case, come on back, just sit in your seat, shut your mouth, drink your coffee, and let the Democrats vote through anything they want? Today's Twitter poll can be found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Yesterday, I asked you this because I pointed out to you that the current governor of Oregon appears to be trying to sabotage any criminal investigation of the disgraced and resigned Shamia Fagan, the former, soon-to-be former Secretary of State. She actually leaves the office 4 days from now. And I said, should they look into alleged crimes? And as I said before, if the facts support that she ought to be charged with a crime, then charge her with a crime. If the facts do not support that, then no true bill, and the grand jury can simply say, we don't see that she committed bribery or official misconduct, any of that, or theft by deception. If the grand jury doesn't see the crime, so be it. But having Tina Kotek, the new governor, who's already hugely unpopular, the least popular governor in America by the numbers, to have her say, I'm going to have this investigated by Ellen Rosenblum, when she knows or should know that Rosenblum has no power to bring any of those charges against Shamia Fagan. Folks, the fix is in. 94% of you voted with me to investigate those crimes. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I got a question for you. As parents, do you want your kids taught about pornography in school, in health class? And not just that it exists or that it's out there. And I'm not talking about showing the kids inappropriate photos, although these days, given what the schools have been doing with your kids, it wouldn't surprise me one little bit if they started doing that. But I heard from the Oregon Moms Union. You've heard them on this show before. And they said, look, some of our parents are really upset about what's being done, in this case, in the Hillsborough schools, although there's no guarantee it isn't happening in other schools throughout Oregon or perhaps even schools in Washington State. And, you know, when my producers and I talked about this, I said, well, maybe they've concluded that most kids, and this is aimed at 15-year-olds, so those in the 10th grade, maybe they're figuring most of these kids have probably seen something either on the internet or a magazine, Penthouse or Playboy or something like that. I said, yeah, but this isn't just teaching that. It's saying we want to tell you about what's in it and notice, I guess, editorial content. So let me read what's there. And then I'm going to tell you how the Hillsborough schools, by the way, every time we call a school district, they decline to call us back. But producer Donovan will be making a call, if he hasn't already, to the Hillsborough schools to say, would you like to come on and talk about
why this was added to the curriculum without going through the normal process. Because what happens is school districts generally, in Washington state, they're forced to do sex ed, even if the local school district has declined to do it before. Those are the orders from Olympia. In the case of Oregon, you've got school districts who adopt a curriculum. It's signed off on by the school board, and then they create a curriculum process whereby a committee takes a look at anything that somebody wants to add or subtract from the curriculum, and they decide if it is, if it's appropriate or not. This stuff apparently bypassed it. So here's one of the screenshots from that curriculum. What does pornography show as the norm? Now, I don't think this is too over the top for our family-oriented show, but it says little to no body hair, double and triple penetration, ejaculating on a woman's face, simultaneous vaginal orgasms every time, very large penises, and having sex for long periods of time. And I thought, look, do your kids need this education? And would you approve of it as a parent? And I ask that, and here's why. As the moms, Oregon Moms Union pointed out, they said last week a concerned parent showed these from a slideshow from 10th grade health class in Hillsborough. The content was not part of the approved curriculum that the district adopted in 2019. Apparently, these were added in 2022 without review of the Community Curriculum Advisory Committee or without a vote by the school board, as near as we can tell. If you aren't aware of what's being taught in your kid's school, we implore you to reach out to the school, ask to review the curriculum, and make sure you do your research. Curriculum is determined by school board members, which is why the upcoming election is so important. Here's what I think is critical here. If you tell the people in your school district, we, the school board who you elect, will decide what curriculum is appropriate and what is not, that's a good thing to do. And let the public weigh in on it. If you say, we also have a curriculum advisory committee, and whatever your concerns are one way or the other, pro-trans, anti-trans, pro-this, pro-that, anti-this, anti-that, you can go to the curriculum committee because they look over everything before we put it in front of your kids. If they add things to the curriculum without asking the advisory committee, without asking the school board, that smacks of this. Anytime you're doing something, anything, whether you're an adult or a kid, if you say, I'm going to do this, but don't tell the boss we're doing it this way because he wouldn't approve. In this case, the boss is the voters. And the people doing it are people within the school district who draw paychecks from the public treasury. So when you do something without asking the people who are your boss and you say, be sure, don't tell the boss we're doing this, you're suggesting that you already know that if the boss, the voters, were asked, that they would say no. So you simply bypass them, which is spitting in the face of voters and citizens and parents and ultimately kids. That's my take on it. I'd be glad to hear from the Hillsborough School District on it. And speaking of that, let's go to Richard. Richard, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network in Hillsborough. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Lars, I got three things I want to suggest to you real quick, and I'll go through them really fast.
Okay.
My first one is I want to suggest the idea of here in Oregon putting an electoral college in the counties for votes, and it would be based on 1 point per 10,000 people in the county. In any county without 10,000 people would have at least one vote, and I think it would even things out quite nice. And the next thing is, I think we should put into the U.S. Constitution that 25 years max for any person as an elected official, anything, even down to the school board. You can't be an elected official for longer than 25 years. And then the third thing, we need to make a truck freight-only bridge across I-5 that would alleviate a lot of the problems on that bridge right now as it is, and would save a lot of headache. Those are my three things.
Truck freight only. I'll get to that one in a second. Can I tell you why the Electoral College won't work and can't work constitutionally?
Why is that?
The Constitution says your vote is no different than my vote. Our votes have to be equal. And you can't give more weight to some votes and less weight to others. Any kind of the only reason the Electoral College is constitutional is because, surprise, surprise, it's in the Constitution.
And it has been suggested and even proposed before that states have a kind of electoral college when choosing a governor, so that a governor would properly represent every county, the non-populous counties as well as the very populous counties, whether it's Oregon or Washington. We all know that King County and Multnomah County call the shots to a large extent. But any system that would give more weight to one person's vote. So if you're voting in Harney County, which has only 8,000 people in it, and you say you get one state electoral college vote, then you're giving more weight to those votes. If you say to the people in Multnomah County, well, you're not going to get as many electoral college votes for the number of voters you have in the county as Harney County does, so you're going to have less. Anytime you make that unequal, they're going to take you straight to court, and they're going to say you can't have it because it violates the Constitution. Now, you can make it constitutional. You'd have to amend the U.S. Constitution and say we're allowed to count the votes of some people as having more weight than the votes of other people. Now, the freight. The freight only bridge. I don't know how it would work. What happens when a truck wants to get on in Vancouver and get off at, say, Hayden Island? You say, well, OK, they can get on the bridge. But is it no passenger cars at all on the I-5 bridge?
Yeah, it would be freight only. They'd have their own exits and entrances. But
okay.
That's a lot of the problem is the mix of cars and trucks.
Yeah, but here's the problem, Richard, is there are about 60,000 people who drive in on that route in the morning and about 60,000 who go out, I think I have the numbers right, out on that route. You're going to kick all of them over to the I-205 bridge, which is the only other way to cross?
No. We're going to build a new bridge that's going to be for trucks only. Keep the current I-5 bridge for all the cars.
And you're going to have double entrances and double exits. One exit if you're in a car, and one entrance if you're in a car, and one exit and one entrance if you're in a truck?
Yeah. I think it'd be cheaper than light rail.
Well, I would get rid of light rail tomorrow. Light rail's an extra almost $2 billion added to that bridge, but get rid of light rail, yeah. A single-purpose bridge just for trucks? I don't think so. We got to be able to have both. Richard, thanks for the call. Back in a moment. It is Conspiracy Theory Thursday. And in King County, at least one sensible person, and I think you can guess who he is proposing new restrictions on where you put sex offenders. We'll talk about that, and I'll get to your calls, too. You've got the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I hope you remember when we talked about on this show the very big and I think very real concerns that one neighborhood in Washington State had when all of a sudden the state of Washington said, hey, we're going to let some people house level 3 sex offenders in your neighborhood. And they said, no, you can't do that. And that neighborhood fought hard. And guess what? You can beat City Hall, or in this case, the state legislature, the state bureaucracy. They did beat them. Well, now King County Council Member Reagan Dunn, he announced today that he wants new restrictions on housing for sex offenders. His ordinance would, quote, impose new restrictions on how Washington State can cite what they call less restrictive alternative LRA housing. Fancy talk for they're not in prison anymore. They're in your neighborhood in a house. And this is where they would house level 3 sex offenders, which is, in case you, like a lot of people and me, didn't know that level 3 in Washington State is the highest level of sex offenders, individuals considered to be a high risk to the community and likely to re-offend. Fancy talk for they're perverts and they're going to pervert some more. So housing facilities, before placing LRA sex offender housing in unincorporated King County, that they would have to get a conditional use permit. That would be subject to public hearings. Housing facilities for sex offenders would have to be more than 500 feet from anywhere that minors congregate. Places like libraries, schools, and parks. Under the ordinance, a public meeting must be held at least 2 weeks before the proposal of a facility's location to notify and engage with the community. Now, what do they usually like to do? Sneak in, drop it into your neighborhood and say, it's now the status quo. There's nothing you can do about it. And I hope that all neighborhoods that have that done to them stand up and say, you're not putting those people in our neighborhood. You don't have any business putting our kids at risk. There are a lot of places to house convicted, high-level, likely to reoffend sex offenders that does not have to be near parks, schools, libraries, and neighborhoods where kids are. And I think Reagan Dunn ought to be applauded for what he's doing. Glad to have you with me on a Thursday. Our Twitter poll question today, should Republican lawmakers come back to Salem and just pass anything the Democrats want? I would say no to that. You can vote any way you like. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. This segment of the show brought to you by nickshivers.com. For an instant offer to sell your home immediately, no showings, no hassles, you pick the closing date. nickshivers.com for details. Now, let's go to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. And if we get an naysayer, we'll put them right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Dave, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network in Bandon, KBND. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, how you doing, sir?
Quite well, sir. Thanks for asking.
Hey, we've been through this rodeo before back with John Kitzhaber as governor. And as far as, you know, I just had an idea, and I've been mulling this over my mind since back when that happened. But any time that there is a ethics violation by an elected official, you know, instead of removing them from office or them resigning, and then they immediately get replaced by another official from their political party.
Yeah,
I think it should be there should be a bill introduced that would make it so that if there is an ethics violation, regardless of political party, the replacement needs to be from an opposing party. And in that way, you have not only has the offender disgraced themselves and disappointed their constituents, but they've also disgraced their party. What we always end up happening is we take the spoiled milk out of the refrigerator. And then we put in last month's spoiled milk instead of getting a fresh idea in there and stuff. And it's just getting old.
Well, can I walk you through where I think that would go?
Okay.
Okay. Before you do, may I make one point? Yeah.
We should have a list of violations that is recognized as, you know, I think I know where you're going with this. I think you're going to say, well, you know, what the left generally tends to do is make up stuff .
No, that's not where I was going, but that's a good thing that they would. No, but here's what would happen. If your plan was in place and Tina Kotek had to appoint a Republican to replace Democrat Shamia Fagan, Shamia Fagan mm-hmm. would just sit in that office and she would refuse to go. And Tina Kotek would say, I'm not going to make her go because if she goes, I have to put in a Republican. That's problem one, okay, is that you would encourage people because you remember there's a Republican back in Congress right now who's actually going to run for re-election. I can't remember his name, but he's from the East Coast and he's just sleazy all day long and he's a Republican. And he just said, I'm not leaving. The voters want to replace me. I'm going to run for re-election. If they want to replace me, they can't. And believe it or not, voters do put crazy people back in. Marion Barry, you know, the guy who got caught with prostitute and cocaine. The voters put him back in.
Right.
But that's problem one, is that you'd encourage somebody who's facing these charges, who's doing screwy things or illegal things, to stay. So they wouldn't have to. Second problem is this, and this has actually happened. Do you remember what happened when Dennis Richardson, Republican, was Secretary of State? Mm-hmm. He died, sadly. He died from cancer.
Right.
And they said, well, to the governor at that time, Brown, you have to replace him with a Republican. You know what she did? She chose a rhino, Bev Clarno.
Yeah.
And so what would happen is say, oh, I'd be glad to put in a Republican. And they'll pick the most left-wing rhino Republican they can find. So it kind of brings up two problems. It is an interesting idea to consider. Dave, thanks for the call. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Lars here with a question for you. Why is it that some people are as stressed out about the future as you'd think they would be? The answer? They're probably among the millions of Americans who prepared themselves with emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. If the worst ever happens, literally millions of American families are already protected from dealing with those empty store shelves. Is yours? Mine is. If not, go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now and grab some emergency food kits, at least one for every member of your family. These kits give you a wide variety of delicious meals that average over 2,000 calories per day. That's
That's what you need. Everything stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. Order your kits right now by going to MyPatriotSupply.com. Your order ships fast and arrives discreetly in unmarked boxes. Listen, this is something you need to jump on now before the next news headline stuns the world. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get your calls. You know, I'm a supporter of the police, but I want the police to do their job. And do I think the police have been doing their jobs lately, in the last couple, 3 years especially? No, I do not. Now, you can say, well, that's what their political masters tell them to do, since every police force in America is led by a chief who is not elected by the people like sheriffs are. He's chosen by a politician, usually a mayor or the city council. Well, now there's talk of forming a federal police force. And I think I find it just as disturbing as Bob Barr does. Bob, of course, is a former CIA analyst, member of the U.S. Congress, and the newly elected first vice president of the board of the National Rifle Association, of which I'm a member, so I have a dog in the fight. And I own guns, so I have two dogs in the fight. Bob, welcome back.
Thank you, Lars. Great to be with you. And I really appreciate your bringing up this topic of a national police force, because it seems to be gaining at least some degree of currency by the far left. You know, back in the day when I was coming up through college and working for the CIA as a young analyst, and even at the time I was a U.S. attorney here in Atlanta, you know, the Democrat Party, generally speaking, stood against abusive federal power and against abusive federal law enforcement. For example, when I was in the House back in the late 90s, I worked closely with the ACLU against government abuses, surveillance, and so forth. But nowadays, the left has seized on this notion of a national police force, not to do what we need the police to do, and that is to protect us against the massive rioting and arsonists that we've seen in recent years. They want a national police force to do a better job of reining in the far right.
Now, you're saying this is aimed specifically at conservatism, and most especially at the folks who identify as MAGA, which I would count myself in that group. I identify as somebody who believes in making America great again, that this is what it's aimed at, not getting a handle on real crime like murder, rape, robbery, assault, looting, arson, and the like that we've seen so much of in the last couple of years. Could this actually happen under our federal system of government?
It can. It shouldn't. And our founders, if one reads the Constitution and reads the Federalist Papers, clearly would be aghast and against such a move. But you look at some of the materials now that are out there, and I read recently an article by a couple of academicians that appeared in Politico magazine about a national police force, and it is very clear the language that they use would be to use a national police force to target, and I'm quoting here, hyperbolic reactions of far-right Republican figures and media commentators, white supremacist groups, bellicose conservative agendas, MAGA movements, radical Republicans. I mean, this is the language they use, so it is clear that the national police force that the left wants now would be to target conservatives generally and MAGA in particular.
Well, and it sounds like from the description you just read, I heard myself in there at least three or four times, but would they even, I mean, I don't even know what they'd tag it onto, whether it'd be the FBI or the U.S. Marshals or whatever. But during all the riots following George Floyd's death, there were states, especially the blue states, that said, hey, you federal aid, you know, U.S. Marshals, FBI and all that, you can only protect federal property in our state. You have no authority outside of that unless we invite you. And that's what the blue state said. I know that because our broadcast studios are two blocks away from what was one of the biggest ground zeros during the riots nationwide, and that was the Marco Hatfield Federal Courthouse. And the local authorities said, you feds have no business protecting anything but that building and other federal buildings. This would also require that the states would have to say yes to it, wouldn't it?
I mean, and this sort of warped notion of the left, yeah. And I remember during that same era, I remember seeing pictures. I wasn't in Washington, D.C. at the time, but I saw news media pictures of federal law enforcement officers, some in uniform, in front of the White House facing demonstrators. And several of these, I think they were FBI agents, were kneeling in solidarity with the protesters. So that gives one a clear indication of where a lot of the sympathies of federal law enforcement officers lie these days. So saying, well, as these authors do, since we have all of these law enforcement agencies out there and they're not properly or fully coordinating with each other, we need to expand that. I mean, just think of the abuses that we already have in federal law enforcement with partisan leadership. That would be expanded greatly if we brought all of this together with a national police force law enforcement focus. It would be disastrous, not only dangerous, but it would completely undercut the very notion of what you indicated, and that is our federal system of government, not a national system of government.
Well, and no real local input. I mean, they might say, well, you can tell us what you like and what you don't like, but ultimately a federal police force would be directed by either the president, head of the executive branch, and that whatever he decides is important is what gets enforced. And if he decides it's not important to go after certain things, so it could be directed very politically from the White House alone. I mean, not even like once you set it up, if the Congress authorized it, once the federal police force is out there, the person who's in charge of it is whoever happens to be sitting in the Oval Office, right?
Absolutely correct. And even the heads of the different agencies that might report to a national police director, they're not elected by the people. Some of them may be appointed by the Senate, but the public has no real input on those kind of things. And others, for example, the head of the FBI, there's no public input whatsoever on that individual. So it completely cuts out the citizenry from the decision-making, and it completely undercuts the power of the states, which is where political power, in the view of our framers, was intended to and should reside.
You know what it reminds me of, Bob, is Germany, because Germany has a federal police force. I mean, they have a little teeny bit of local police, but for the most part, they're a much smaller place than the United States, but they're one big federal police force directed from Berlin, right?
Right, and most countries are like that. In England, for example. And the authors of this piece in Politico that I referred to, they lament the fact that, well, the UK has this centralized police force and we don't. Hey, guys, we broke away from England specifically because of that type of national force.
Absolutely right. Bob, it sounds like the OMB may be saying, hey, maybe we can just kick the can down the road on the debt ceiling limit. I wish we had time to talk about that with you, but we so appreciate your point of view. Thanks a lot, Bob.
Always a pleasure.
That is Bob Barr, former member of Congress and newly elected first vice president to the board of directors of the NRA. And yes, I got a bias there. We'll get to your phone calls and emails in the next segment, 866-HEY-LARS, and send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to take your phone calls and your emails. I want to give you a little update on Shamia Fagan, who announced her resignation as Secretary of State of Oregon, because this story goes so very many disturbing places. In fact, I did get one email from a gentleman who said, Lars, you didn't talk about Shamia Fagan, Secretary of State, at all yesterday. I said, well, I spent the better part of the first hour of the show talking about Shamia Fagan, and I also talked about her in the Twitter poll that we ask people, but whatever. Let me give you that update in a moment. If you want to join the conversation, we call it the best conversation in talk journalism. We call Thursdays Conspiracy Theory Thursday, because over the years, I just got a lot of conspiracy theories from people on Thursdays. So we thought the name fit. And then, of course, if you want to jump in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Naysayers go to the head of the line, always, have for more than 26 years, always will, as long as I'm in charge of things. And then, of course, our Twitter poll today in Salem. This is not Olympia, but in Salem, should Republican lawmakers come back to Salem, so that the Democrats can pass anything they want. Now, let me give you a word of explanation on that. In any legislative body, your city council, your county commission, the state legislature, even the U.S. Congress, you must have a quorum present to be able to make decisions. If you have a five-member city council, two members of that city council cannot get together, have a meeting, and pass ordinances or spend money. They need to have at least three people present out of five. And the math works that way all the way up to the House and the Senate. So when the Republicans, who are decidedly in the minority because the Democrats have supermajorities in both houses, or I guess one has a supermajority, the other one is close to a supermajority, which means they can override vetoes, they can pass things that you wouldn't otherwise be able to pass. If the Republicans walk out the door, the Democrats can't vote on anything whatsoever because there is no quorum present to make that decision. So the Republicans have walked out because, and the case they make is this, the rules, the law in Oregon says that if you're going to pass a piece of legislation, it must be written in such a way that the average person could read it and understand it. And as I've already pointed out, there are literally bills proposed by Democrats, written by Democrats, that when questions are asked about, will this law do this or that, the Democrats who wrote the laws or who wrote the proposed laws, the bills, are surprised by the answer. Now, when the folks who write a new law that hasn't become a law yet, hasn't passed the legislature, hasn't been signed by the governor, when they're surprised by what that law would do, that means they don't understand what they wrote on the piece of paper. And if they don't understand it and they're the ones who wrote it, what chance has the average citizen of understanding what that law means? And I've given you a couple of examples. One of them is one that most of the news media, not all of them, but almost all the main news media in the Northwest will say this is about gender-affirming care and supporting reproductive health. And you say, what does it really say? You say, well, it really says we can give an abortion to a 10-year-old and not tell or ask her parents. It does? I thought it was about reproductive health. You can give an abortion to a 10-year-old and you don't have to tell the parents and you don't have to ask the parents? Yep. We can also chemically castrate a teenage boy. You can? And you don't have to ask his parents? Nope, you don't have to. So I'll translate that for you. When they're passing garbage like that and the Republicans properly say that breaks the rules. The rules say the bill has to be understandable by the citizens who are going to be subject to that law. If it becomes a law, then the Republicans walk out. And my case is that I believe Republicans are doing exactly what they're supposed to do. They were elected as representatives, same as Washington elects representatives. They represent the people in their district. If they think the only way to stop a bad law is to walk out the door, they should do so. Now, the Democrats whine and gripe about this. Fact is, the Democrats do this too. And so you say, well, if it's fair for the Democrats to do it, then it's fair for the Republicans to do it. And I would merely put the question to you this way. Most of the media is saying, you know, the Republicans aren't doing their jobs, you know, because all they're doing is parroting what the Democrats say. Well, if your job is to represent the people of your district and the people of your district believe that that is a bad law and you have one way to stop that bad law and that is walk out the door, if you're really representing your district, should you stay in the building and let the law pass and say, well, I didn't vote for it, but the law passed and it passed because I was there to provide a quorum? Are you properly representing the people in your district if you do that? I would say no to that. I'd say your only way to represent your district is walk out the door. And if the Democrats think it's a legitimate tactic, and they do, and I think it's a legitimate tactic, and I do, and the Republicans say it's legitimate, then walk out the door. Anyway, you can find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, update on Shamia Fagan. She will become the former Secretary of State. She indicated she will be resigning. It's going to happen on the 8th of May, 4 days from now. She is going to leave that office. If she thought she had financial problems when she ran for the office and took the job, she shouldn't have run for the office. And she effectively lied to the voters by saying, make me the Secretary of State, I'll do a great job. She has done a terrible job. She has ignored election law violations. She has ignored big problems. And then she sold herself to the folks at LaModa, the big weed chain, the marijuana chain, for $10,000 a month. And what did they get out of it? Well, Shamia Fagan, Secretary of State's office, since they're in charge of making sure that state agencies get audited, she was auditing the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Board. And she told the auditors, you need to listen to LaModa. Now, I think there's nothing wrong with having state agencies that actually listen to citizens. But if you get special access because you pay people for that access, kind of like Hunter Biden did, where Ukraine back in the day got special access to Joe Biden and got Joe Biden saying, I'm going to cut off the $1 billion funds to Ukraine if you don't fire that prosecutor who's about to investigate Burisma that was paying his son. That's that kind of collusion. Then you've got Val Hoyle, member of Congress. And Val Hoyle, when she was the head of Bureau of Labor and Industries, she decided to steer a contract worth more than $500,000 to one of the two owners of LaModa. You say, well, you know, state gives out grants and things like that. She got a big pile of money, tens of thousands of dollars for her campaign from LaModa. So that's a problem. And then you've got the other problem, and that is the Democrat Party of Oregon helped to elect not just Shamia Fagan a couple of years ago and Val Hoyle to Congress, but helped elect Tina Kotek as governor. And how'd they do that? Well, they had $500,000 that was stolen by the cryptocurrency scam called FTX. $500,000 from FTX principals went to the Democrat Party of Oregon. Have they paid the money back? No. And they're making noises about saying, well, we'll donate it to charity or something like that. Here's the problem with donating it to charity. They're real live Americans who got ripped off by the FTX cryptocurrency scam. There's a bankruptcy proceeding going on right now. Every dime paid back to the bankruptcy receiver can make its way back to the actual owners of that money. The Democrat Party of Oregon has said, hey, we already spent the money. We can't pay it back. That's not our problem. You need to pay it back and do the right thing. And the Secretary of State should have been all over that. And so should Tina Kotek. But both of them are compromised. At least Fagan's on her way out the door. I hope Kotek follows her soon. Back in a moment. It's the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I was a kid when Watergate was going on. And from a perspective of 50 years later, it kind of looks like it's chump change by comparison to what goes on today. You know, a burglary, some wiretapping, a payoff, a cover-up, and it ousted a president, Nixon, in that case. Now we've got a president who we are told by some fairly high-ranking folks, Chuck Grassley, a Republican of Iowa, and Representative James Comer from Kentucky, who are on the House Oversight Committee, say they have a document, or at least the document is in the possession of the FBI and the DOJ, that says that then-Vice President Joe Biden got money in an allegedly criminal scheme from a foreign national in exchange for policy decisions when Joe Biden was vice president. I think that's true. I think it's probably just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to that. But I thought we'd talk to Susan Crabtree about it. She's a political correspondent for Real Clear Politics and their White House, or one of their White House reporters. Susan, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much for having me, Lars.
Have I inaccurately described what both Grassley and Comer claim to have or claim to know about at this point?
No, I think it hit big yesterday in the media across the ideological spectrum. You had Reuters and Yahoo News, everyone to the Fox News reporting it, because it is a big allegation that the FBI had generated an FD 1023 form. It's supposed to be unclassified. That's what they're saying. That's what Comer and Grassley are saying. And, you know, they cannot do this lightly because it will undercut their own investigation. So they, in my mind, I hope they have a copy of this. I hope they have exactly what's in there, and they're just trying to call the FBI's bluff because, you know, the FBI is not going to just hand over this document to Congress. They have issued a subpoena for the document, and they have an IRS whistleblower saying that it exists and giving them a little bit of the content of it, although we don't know the details about what it's alleging. We don't know if it's China that the foreign national belongs to, Ukraine, or which country, and the details. But, you know, it is something that was pretty pretty explosive yesterday in the news.
Well, and I guess, Susan, here's the other question. How long has the FBI had this? Because they're saying this is part of an ongoing investigation. If they've had, if the document was created showing an allegation that money went to Joe Biden in exchange for policy decisions, a payoff when he was vice president, that was more than 6 years ago. So have they had this for a year, 2 years, 5 years, 6 years? I mean, how long have they known about this, and what are they doing with it? And are they just burying it by saying, oh, we're still investigating? Well, look, if money was paid that went to Joe Biden, and if Joe Biden did the quid pro quo by returning a policy, some kind of policy win for that foreign national, whoever the foreign national happened to be, that's about as illicit as it gets, except that he was vice president. Now he's president. And is he now compromised to the very people? I mean, let's assume that, say it was China. So China gives some money. It makes its way to Joe Biden. They get certain policy decisions out of the Obama White House while Joe Biden is vice president, because he was the point guy on China. And they get, basically, they pay for a decision. Joe Biden makes sure it happens. If that's the case, and China knows it too, and they would, then they have Joe Biden, you know, by the private parts right now, because they can tell him, you go along with whatever we're doing, even maybe up to and including invading Taiwan. Because if you don't, we're going to tell everybody what we know about the other end of the deal, which may even be a lot more than the FBI knows. This is very much about where America sits and whether or not we have a compromised president sitting in the Oval Office or recuperating at home, since he hasn't been seen in public in 2 days. Susan, tell me what you know about this.
Well, I will say that I covered ethics in Congress for many, many years for the Hill newspaper, and I was an investigative reporter. And it's quite easy to prove the quid. It's quite another thing to prove the quo. But we need far more explanations and transparency about what transpired between China and Hunter Biden and the close associates of the Biden family. Many, many of them, we're learning, were implicated in this. And I just get it back to, for your listeners, Hunter Biden has been under investigation since 2018 by the FBI because his bank flagged Chinese deposits into his account, among other
hundreds of suspicious deposits. Maybe some of those also include Ukraine, but it was literally hundreds. This is where you go to your bank, Susan, just for my audience, you go to your bank and you drop 20 grand in cash into the bank. And they say, where'd you get this? And you go, it came in a brown paper bag. And, you know, that's not going to be enough for the FBI or the IRS or anybody else. And your bank is going to flag that one. And you may just get a visit from some people saying, so how'd you score the extra 20 grand? Because if it's just coming in cash with no obvious source, like I sold a house or whatever, and usually that arrives in a check, you've got some explaining to do, and for legitimate reasons, right? If you're just suddenly showing up with a lot of cash. So they flag hundreds of these suspicious activity reports, and he's under investigation for 5 years. The FBI can tell you everything about the J6 crowd, but they can't do anything with Hunter?
Yeah, and I try to boil it down to your listeners. There is a 2-3 carat diamond that has been estimated to upwards to $80,000 that Hunter Biden supposedly accepted. It was caught up in his first divorce. The ex-wife wanted access to this diamond, so she knew about it. That the Chinese energy officials gave to Hunter Biden, instead of saying no, I cannot accept that, he says he no longer had it. Who knows if that's true? He gave it to his unidentified associate. Okay, where is this diamond? Was it disclosed in his taxes? And because we are dealing with this nether zone, you had Harry Reid and his son, when he was Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid legally represented a Chinese company, energy company, and Harry Reid did a deal and a project in Nevada for solar companies and renewable energies that involved this company. Now, that created a stink, and there was ethics questions raised about that at the time. But when you talk about the level of money that we're talking about, millions and millions of dollars that Hunter Biden allegedly took from China, and that there have been so many episodes where the Biden family was, and several members of the Biden administration, have been caught in lies. The most recent one was Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State, saying he never, when he met with Hunter, when Hunter Biden was getting $1 million a year from Burisma, Ukrainian energy company, he met with Antony Blinken. The laptop shows the emails. Antony Blinken testified to Congress that he never had those meetings. We also know that Antony Blinken was the one, he denies it, but other people say he was the one who organized the cover-up.
The 51 people signing on the letter.
Correct. And you probably, your listeners probably know all about that. So, yes, we have seen time and time again episodes where this administration does not seem to be pursuing these investigations in the Hunter Biden as aggressively as they pursued those against the Trump and Trump associates. And we just have the raid on Mar-a-Lago as the prime example. And after that raid, Rasmussen polling showed that about 60% of Americans were concerned about the trust, their trust level diminished in the FBI after that unprecedented raid on Trump's house. And we did not see the same treatment with Biden's unclassified documents that were found in his Wilmington, Delaware home.
Might help explain why Hunter was renting the home for $50,000 a month, which is way more than, I mean, it's like if somebody was renting my garage for $10,000 a month, people might wonder, is somebody trying to surreptitiously put money in Lars's pocket? By the way, my garage is not for rent, but her stories are available at Real Clear Politics. That's Susan Crabtree, political correspondent, White House reporter for Real Clear Politics. Susan, it's a pleasure. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get your calls. This segment of the show brought to you by the home power generating folks at ProTech Power. Make sure your loved ones are safe when the power goes out. 541-ONA-GEN. That's 541-ONA-GEN. I want to get to your calls here in just a moment, but I want to mention a couple of things about illegal aliens and the crime they bring to the United States. Donald Trump, you know, about 8 years ago or so, when he came down the escalator and said, look, illegal aliens and illegal entry to the United States are one of the biggest problems we have. And he made the point that the major media didn't like at all, and the liberals especially, and a whole bunch of Republicans didn't like it. He said, when Mexico, and at that time the big focus was on Mexico, now it's more on Central and South America illegals coming in. He says they're not sending their best. And we all know that, and we've documented on this show, that there are a huge number of already convicted serious criminals who are coming in illegally across our border. And I've pointed out to you time and again that here in the Pacific Northwest, as an example, an estimated 4.5 or 5% of Oregon's population is made up of illegal aliens. You only have estimates because you can't be sure. It's not like they make it easy to count illegal aliens, because most of the agencies of state government are shielding those illegal aliens from any kind of public scrutiny. When they're arrested, they're not reported to ICE. None of that stuff happens. But I'd point this out. Best estimate, 4.5 to 5% of the state's population is illegal aliens. And if you said, well, how do you measure how bad the group is as a group? You say, well, 14% of the people locked up in state prisons in Oregon convicted of murder, 14% are illegal aliens. You say, so they're 4.5 or 5% of the population, and they're 14% of the convicted murderers? And then you've got the story that says, well, okay, what about rapists? That's a bad crime. Yes, it is. 18% of the convicted rapists sitting in state custody in the state prisons, not accused, not alleged, but convicted of rape, 18% are illegal aliens. You say, well, that's pretty bad. They're punching above their weight as a group. Yes, they are. And then consider what we've heard about just recently. I'll give one example. This is from outside the Northwest. In Texas, the man who walked out in his front yard with an AR-15, his name is Francisco Oropeza, either spelled with an S or a Z. Nobody seems to figure that out just yet. He killed 5 people in the house next door. And why did he do that? Some of them were illegal aliens as well. And he's an illegal alien. He's now in custody. He's accused of murder. He's his bond set at $5 million. Why did he kill this whole family? Because they complained to him that firing his AR-15 in the front yard of his house was keeping their baby from being able to get some sleep. Okay? So that's one example. This is the kind of behavior that, sadly,
is characteristic of too many illegal aliens. Number two, and this one is from the Northwest, Jose Alberto Sanchez Seja, or otherwise known as Jose Luis Sanchez, and our friend David Cross, who follows these numbers and documents all of this very carefully, is the third criminal alien felon convicted of driving under the influence of intoxicants. And if you say, well, DUI, that's not so bad, who killed an Oregon resident. And guess what? He's still at large in Oregon. Now, hold on. So he drove drunk. He killed an Oregonian, a legitimate American citizen, and they haven't caught up to him yet, but he's accused. The others, Ignacio Marindon Zarega and Leonel Zarita Loeza, they are also at large, even though they were involved in fatal DUI accidents and they're illegally in our country. So you've got people who are getting killed by this. And then let me go to Seattle. Officers with ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, have now removed Omar Abdi Mohammed, 38, citizen of Somalia, illegally here in the United States. A grand jury indicted him for conspiracy to provide material support to terrorists, providing material support to terrorists, and conspiracy to kill, kidnap, maim, and injure. He was convicted of the charge in 2009, spent 12 years in prison, sentenced to 12 years in prison, and now he's being removed. They encountered Mohammed while he was in the Federal Bureau of Prisons. They got an immigration detainer on him, and a federal judge finally said, get this guy out of our country. Let me give you some bigger numbers than that. Those are individual cases. In fiscal year 2022, the federal government's fiscal year runs from October 1st to September 31st every year. That's their financial year. They arrested 46,000 non-citizens with criminal histories, 198,000 charges and convictions, 21,000 assaults, 8,000 sexual assault cases, 5,500 weapons offenses, 1,500 for homicide, and more than 1,100 for kidnapping. This is a group of people. Illegal aliens that, while I would never say that every single illegal alien is a criminal, Donald Trump was absolutely right. They are not sending their best. And I'm telling you all this as Title 42, a federal law, is about to expire. The Biden administration didn't want to use it to try to hold back the massive tidal wave of illegal aliens who are coming into the country. The estimated number of people who have entered during the Biden administration, it hasn't even been 2.5 years, but the estimated number of illegal aliens allowed in under Biden, 9 million so far in not quite 2.5 years of Joe Biden. Does that tell you where we're headed right now? Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Oregon Utility Notification Center wants to remind you that whether you're planting a tree, building a fence, or just making improvements around your farm or home, click or call before you start your work to get the area marked. Then dig safely and avoid contact with buried utilities. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones. Know what's below. Call before you dig. For more information, visit us online at digsafelyoregon.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and emails. Well, it's raining outside the studio, and one of the oldest adages is that everybody talks about the weather and nobody actually does anything about it. Well, of course, there's climate change, and of course, all of the left talks about climate change. They force the discussion on the rest of us, and then they say, and here's what we're going to do about climate change to save the planet. Because, as you know, the great Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, PhD in physics and weatherology, she forecast that the whole world is going to come to an end because of climate change in a dozen years. And she did that almost 4 years ago. So we're getting close to the end. And nobody knows that better than Todd Myers, who's the environmental director at the Washington Policy Center. Hey, Todd, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. I admit I don't have a degree in weatherology.
Well, AOC has a degree, I think, in bartenderology, and I am pretty sure that Boston University has disowned the degree that they awarded to her for some reason, even though she seems to be not the sharpest tool in the shed. But let's talk about the state's new climate policy for Washington State and whether or not this new tax on CO2 emissions and all the other things that are being pushed at us, whether it's transit plans, whether it's mandates for EVs, whether it's carbon taxes and the rest, is any of this going to actually make it better if you're worried that CO2 is taking the planet to rack and ruin, or does it actually have the potential to make it worse?
I think there's some in column A and some in column B. The way that the cap on CO2 emissions is structured is that if the state abides by it, it has the ability to reduce CO2 emissions. In the same way that we could reduce CO2 emissions tomorrow by banning all gasoline cars. It would work, but there would be a very high cost, and that is what we're seeing with the CO2 cap and the tax, is that the price that is being charged in Washington State is 75% higher than the same system in California. Now, the legislators don't mind that because the additional funding, that cost, goes into the state coffers. So it just means more money that legislators get to spend on pet projects and special interest groups and things like that. So there's two issues. One is, can it work? And second is, at what cost? And in terms of the CO2 tax right now, the cost is much higher than in other states.
Well, and much higher than the benefit, because if I'm hearing you right, you say, yeah, we can solve this problem. We're going to wreck the rest of your life, society, industry, jobs, and everything else, but we'll save the planet from CO2 by wrecking the economy and wrecking the United States. I mean, because if you raise energy prices high enough or through carbon taxes or anything else, you start shutting industry down, don't you?
Well, that's exactly right, and we have seen that in a number of different areas. So first, the cost per gallon in Washington State is between 40 and 50 cents a gallon. That's going to have a big impact on a number of different industries. The second is that the regulations are hitting manufacturing in the state, like an aluminum plant that's in Northwest Washington State. They haven't opened yet because the regulations are onerous, and they're worried about the costs. So you are seeing economic impacts. And then you are also seeing gamesmanship. So a piece I just wrote recently was about Sound Transit, the transit agency in the Seattle area, looking to take advantage of what's called the low carbon fuel standard. But the way that they would game the system is that they would get money to cover cost overruns, the repeated cost overruns that the transit agency has had, but it wouldn't do anything additional to reduce CO2 emissions. And even for those who support the low carbon fuel standard and other CO2 laws, they say, well, at least it is reducing CO2 emissions. If Sound Transit gets away with what they're doing and the state approves what they're doing, which is taking money from the system to cover their losses, it is taking money out of the system for no environmental benefit. And that, I think, is dangerous, is that a lot of these programs simply become a slush fund for politically favored interests, even though they provide no benefit to the environment.
I mean, because, look, I thought Sound Transit was a game from the beginning, a scam. Because they originally, I think, at $52 billion. And then the minute they passed that, I said, hold on a second. They're not going to build it for 52. It's going to be billions, maybe tens of billions more than that. It's not going to come in on time. But if you've already promised to build it for a set price, and then you say, hey, we're short, and if you don't give us the money, we won't be able to finish it. Well, hold on. You get to pitch $50 billion projects and then run them short of money and run them badly and then just demand more money, saying, well, if you don't give us the money, we won't finish it, and then there won't be any benefit at all, when I think arguably there's no benefit to begin with. When they say, well, they're not going to take people out of their cars. What they're going to do is move people from diesel-powered buses to electric-powered trains, and some of the electricity currently comes from fossil, and it's likely to for a good long time, isn't it?
Well, even the electricity mostly comes, and Washington State is very clean because, as we've talked about before, the dams. But what that ignores is that what they want to pretend is that the light rail just magically appeared without any construction. And, of course, the construction with all of the concrete, with all of the rails, with all of the systems that they had to build to put the light rail on has a tremendous cost in terms of energy and CO2 emissions. And what they want to do is pretend none of that happened. So they like to call light rail carbon free while ignoring all of the upfront costs. And that's just, it's just disingenuous. And like I say, that's why I think that this is, if they get away with this, it completely shows that the low carbon fuel standard and some of these other programs are just about funneling money to favored interests rather than actually trying to reduce CO2 emissions.
Well, and Todd, look, tell me if I'm completely off base, but if you say we're going to build this system and all that concrete and steel and all the diesel that was burned to be able to make all that happen has a gigantic carbon impact. If you said, okay, and now you're going to have to buy carbon credits to offset that, maybe they shouldn't be getting money. Maybe they should be told you're going to have to pay money for the carbon inputs that you've put into your project. And you know they'll squawk if you try to do that. And yet that's what they're doing to everybody else. The folks who sell diesel and gasoline are being told, you want to sell this stuff? You got to pay the carbon credits. Hey, Sound Transit, you want to build this thing? Pay for the carbon credits. And it would actually bring some, I don't know, reality to these folks who claim they're all good and no bad.
That's right. And what they end up having to do at the end of the day is creating this very complicated Rube Goldberg machine where they take money from one hand and put it in the other and claim that they have made progress in reducing CO2 emissions when really it's just shifting money around. So, you know, they don't pay the price. And the evidence of that, just to put the cherry on top, is they're very frivolous and, in fact, held an almost $1 million party when they opened the light rail station. $1 million just basically to do a ribbon cutting for a party. They're very frivolous about how they use money and whether or not they actually achieve the goals because they don't pay the prices.
Absolutely right. That's Todd Myers from the Washington Policy Center. Coming up in a moment, I'll get to your phone calls. And should a man who stops a mentally ill guy on public transit from attacking other people, but the guy ends up dead, should that man who is trying to save his fellow transit riders be charged with murder? We'll get to that next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to see you get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. I want to tell you about a story I've been following for the last couple of days. It involves a former Marine, a former U.S. Marine, a Marine veteran. Some of the media are calling them ex-Marines, and you never do that, with possible exception of Oswald, because once a Marine, always a Marine, and I wouldn't do them that disservice. But here's what happened in simple terms. And I'll admit, we don't have all the details yet, even though this happened a couple of days ago. Here's what happened. The man is riding a subway on the F train in New York City. I don't know the town that well, so I don't know what the F train is specifically, but he's on the subway. He is now being described for his heroic efforts to try to protect his fellow transit riders from a mentally ill man who was at least accosting them, if not assaulting them. Now, if somebody throws garbage in my face, I call that an assault. Now, is it a criminally prosecutable assault? Probably not. But here's what happened. Right now in New York City, NYPD detectives and prosecutors from Manhattan, and you know that place is as woke and politically correct as the day is long, they're talking now about whether or not to file charges against the Marine of murder. Now, what happened? Well, this man's on the train, Jordan Neely, not the Marine, but the bad guy. Jordan Neely is a guy with a criminal record. He is apparently well known. He shows up in Times Square and on the subways as the king of pop. So he's playing Michael Jackson, but he's kind of crazy, it sounds like. And he begins to accost people on the train. And at some point, the Marine stands up and he says, he tries to stop the guy. And Neely had been yelling and throwing garbage at the passengers. The Marine stepped in. Now, this is the way it's being described by the media, but I want to alert you to a couple of things. They say he put the victim in a chokehold and tried to restrain him. I want to give you, I got a real education about 30 years ago. There are chokeholds like an arm bar that go right across your Adam's apple if you're a man, and this guy was a man. They can break your hyoid bone. They can actually kill you. There is also a neck compression, what the police used to call a sleeper hold, where if you imagine you put the crook of your elbow around somebody's Adam's apple, your forearm is against the left side of their neck, and you're doing this from behind, and your bicep is against the right side of the neck. And if you squeeze, doesn't have to be that hard. You're not trying to pull the person's head off. You're trying to compress the carotid arteries. And if you do that, you can cause the person to pass out in a very short period of time. I'm also aware that sometimes when you put somebody in a sleeper hold, the person passes out and never wakes up. That actually happened in a case that the police were involved in a long, long time ago, and the man died. And that man was doing nothing wrong. This guy was accosting people. And what I'm aware of is that if you ride transit, I have so many of the people who work for me, so many friends who end up riding transit, who say we're constantly under attack, under assault, being accosted by the mentally ill, by drug addicts, by people who are just trying to steal things. And all of us wish that somebody would stand up and do something about that. And you'd have to ask yourself, did this Marine do what he needed to do to try to restrain the guy? The guy kept on kicking. A second passenger jumped in to try to help the former Marine and hold this guy down. He eventually stopped kicking. He had passed out, and then he didn't wake up. There was medical help that was called. He was taken to the hospital. He died. I'm sorry for that. But here's what we've got. We've got New York City. Remember that New York City is one of the most politically correct places on earth. Even though Eric Adams is better than his predecessor, they're not perfect. And one New York City official, the comptroller for the city, I'm kind of surprised to see the money guy, the numbers guy out commenting, but he says, New York City is not Gotham. We must not become a city where a mentally ill human being can be choked to death by a vigilante without consequence. That's the level of the rhetoric that's going on. Instead of saying, we can't become a city, any city in America, no matter where you are, if you're a bigger city, you're going to have transit. You're going to have trains, you're going to have buses and other forms of transit. Do you want any American city to be the kind of city where people are routinely assaulted, accosted, attacked, and robbed on transit? And nobody is allowed to do anything about it. Because what you do about it, if you decide to stand up and say, I'm going to restrain this person, I'm going to do the minimum necessary, there's no sign that this Marine acted outrageously. You know, that he said, well, I'm going to restrain this guy and then I'm going to kick him in the head. Didn't do that. What he did was he restrained somebody who was accosting other passengers. And I'll bet those of you who ride transit, I don't on a regular basis, but if you ride transit, you probably see this kind of stuff happening all the time. And I'll bet some of you probably say, depending on your age, depending on gender, depending on your size, depending on your skills, you say, I'm not getting involved in that. You can get hurt or killed trying to intercede. So you're becoming a place, and I will tell you this, this is way before my time. This was when I was about 5 years old, 1964, and there was a young lady by the name of Kitty Genovese, and she was also in New York City, and she worked as a waitress and a bartender. She was walking home from work. A man attacked her. The man stabbed her. The man raped her. And it happened that it was warm. People had their windows open. There wasn't a lot of air conditioning back in 1964 in New York. People heard her screams for a long time. And America was humiliated because not one of those people who heard the screams of Kitty Genovese did anything about it. Didn't even call the police. I mean, here are all these people sitting in their nice, safe apartments, not a fancy neighborhood by any stretch. Did they pick up the phone and call the police and say, there's a woman out there screaming, I think she's being attacked? Not one picked up the phone. Not one stepped out to help. Now, I think we may be headed back to that kind of America. And I understand it's different if you're sitting on a train and you're 20 feet away from a crazy man who's accosting people. If you step in, I would be the first to admit you've got a very good chance. If that's a dangerous, mentally ill person, you've got a great chance of getting killed. You've got a great chance of getting stabbed. You've got a great, and in this case, what we're telling people, if New York City decides to accuse this former Marine of murder, and put him on trial. They're already trying to call this the new George Floyd. If they do that, they're sending the message, you should sit in your seat, you should ignore the crimes around you, you should ignore the cries for help, you should ignore it when criminals, because if you're assaulting somebody, you're a criminal. If you're robbing somebody, you're a criminal. If you are merely attacking somebody, you are committing a crime. That applies in every city in America. And if you're telling people, don't you dare step in. If you step in to do the right thing with all the right intentions, and it happens that the person you restrain ends up either hurt or dead, then you get to go to jail. Now, if that's the message we're sending, we are in a scary place, America. We're in a place where the right is now wrong, and the wrong is now permitted. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. John Kerry has never impressed me, not as a presidential candidate, not as Secretary of State, and certainly not as the climate czar that he now serves as under President Joe Biden. This is a guy who lectures the whole country and in some ways the whole world about how we should all cut our carbon footprint. While this guy who's very, very wealthy, he got his wealth the old-fashioned way, he married into it, flies around the globe in a private jet, burning lots and lots of jet fuel, something I don't object to. But don't burn all that fuel and then tell me that I'm not allowed to drive my car is my attitude. James Varney joins me now, who's a reporter with Real Clear Investigations, because maybe I don't know the half of it about the enormous carbon footprint that John Kerry may be hiding. James, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Lars. Thanks for having me.
So tell me this. I think most of us kind of know intuitively, if you see like a guy like John Kerry get on a private jet or get off a private jet, you know he's already got a big carbon footprint. But is he hiding even more than we can see with our own eyes on news coverage?
Well, it's not clear, for one thing, Lars, who's paying for all that. So Kerry's making all these trips all around the globe, and I thought you were spot on in your intro where all these people that are trying to lecture us about our carbon footprint are flying all over the globe to Davos or to Hanoi or to Brazil or to London, wherever it might be, Cairo. And they have much bigger carbon footprints than you or I might. So an analysis that some people did last year of his flight said that he had a carbon footprint of more than 9 million pounds. Now, that was just for part of 2022. And so who's paying for all these trips? And exactly what he's doing on all these trips is something that thus far they haven't been willing to tell us or Congress.
Well, and I guess in some ways, James, I think, let me tell you my sort of, a gut level reaction to this guy. I think people like John Kerry are like the Blues Brothers. You remember the movie, the original movie, where they said they got in the car and they said, we're on a mission from God. Now, I don't know what kind of faith John Kerry practices, if any, but if he decides I'm on a mission from God, I'm going to save the planet, so I'm allowed to burn all this jet fuel and you're not, because my work is a mission from God or whatever God he, follows, the God of climate, and the rest of us are just going about our lives, so therefore we're peons who don't have any right to do that. And I honestly think that's how they sort of size all this up or make it fit into some kind of twisted moral reference to say, well, I'm allowed to do all this because my work is so important. I must jet over to Europe to have a 2-day meeting with somebody and then jet back when I could have got it done on the phone or by a Zoom call.
Yeah, it smacks of all of that, doesn't it? I mean, and you're 100% right. Why not just do it with a Zoom call? Why not just have a conference like you or I are doing right now? I mean, you don't have to have these international flights going all over the place. And now he's taking some of them on his private jet, and he's taking some of them commercial. So whether we're paying for his private jet or he's footing the bill for that, we don't know. And so you've got questions both about the kind of hypocrisy that you just outlined with them trying to tell us how we should live, but it's sort of do as I say, not as I do. And then there's also the layer on top of that, which is he's not being forthcoming about how much this is costing and what he's doing.
Well, and not just him, but James, you made the point. James Varney, of course, is a reporter for Real Clear Investigations. James writes these great pieces, and in this one, he makes it clear this isn't just John Kerry, whose work is done under the auspices of the State Department. You say, okay, so there's some transparency there. No, the administration around him, as you've said, wraps the rest of his efforts, who he's meeting with, who he's talking to, where he's going, where he's appearing. They wrap it in the kind of secrecy, quoting from your story, that is usually reserved for CIA black box operations. That brings a whole new level to it, that somehow he's doing something for the benefit of the whole planet, but the planet can't know exactly what he's doing or who he's talking to, right?
Yeah, and that's an important point, it seems to us. I mean, who's paying for this, and exactly what are his powers? Does he have the authority to enter into treaties and things like this on behalf of the United States? It's like they call it a cabinet-level position. It was never vetted or confirmed by the Senate. And you've got Congress twice sent him letters saying, we'd like to know how you're spending the 1 year it was $11 million, then another year he had, or rather it was like $5 million, and then the next year it was $16.5 million. We'd like to know how you're spending that. And he just ignored it. And now that the Republicans have their thin majority in the House and Comer got the gavel with the Oversight Committee, he sent him a letter on April 25th, again, asking for this information and saying, you know, if you blow us off one more time, I think the next one might be accompanied by something you'll recognize. It's called a subpoena. But it shouldn't have to come to that. I mean, this is quite clearly a government office that you and I and your listeners fund and pay for, and this should all be public. They do tell you where he's going, and they will release copies of his speeches, which is, you and I could write them off the top of our head, right, about how,
yep,
what an existential threat this is and how awful this is, and if we don't all stop driving our cars and everything next week, the ocean might rise a foot in 2091 or whatever the current year is. That's all well and good. But if we're paying for it, and he might be entering into treaties that bind us to economic things like that, the public has a right to know.
Well, and James, let me throw one more thing in, and feel free to tell me I'm off base. But if it were treaties, it would mean that they would have to submit it to the U.S. Senate. And even though it's slightly in Democrat hands, they would have to consider it publicly and then take a vote. And either and you know how many things like Kyoto, Paris Accord was never put in as a treaty. The deal, the JCPOA with Iran was never done as a deal. And Kerry was in the thick of all that stuff. And of course, both Obama and Biden have been known to sign deals which act like treaties, have the force of law, but they've never been confirmed as required by the Constitution. So he could be cutting deals. I prefer to call them deals because I don't think they'll ever be submitted to the Senate, which means the people's representatives never get a say about them, but they will still be acted upon by the Biden administration as though they have the power of law. So you say, hold on, the system said a president can cut a treaty. He could cut a Paris climate treaty, but then he'd have to submit it to the people's reps and they'd either shoot it down or vote it up. And reminding you of Kyoto, that was a deal. And they say, hey, look at this deal. And you go, no, we're not voting for that thing. And I don't think they'll ever do it. But they'll say, well, we signed off on this deal. Joe's signature is on it. And John Kerry made it happen. And you guys didn't know a thing about it until it was already a done deal. You think I'm off base?
Well, I hope you are. But, I mean, I don't think it's far-fetched to think that, right? I mean, we saw Obama kind of set the precedent for this with that Iran deal that he struck, which,
yep,
they just kind of said, we're not going to call it a treaty, so therefore it doesn't have to go for Senate confirmation. They could be doing that again right now, and we don't know. And as you say, it could be economically ruinous for us. We know that most of these things like Kyoto and the Paris Accords and things like this, the brunt of it is all falling on the Western economy. And the main emitters of greenhouse gases right now in Asia, they're not going to abide by that. And many of the poorer countries that want to develop their economies with wonderful, affordable sources of energy aren't going to abide by that. And why should they, right? I mean, if you and I lived there, what? That's crazy. Why would we do that? So you've got, on the one hand, something that might be a really bad idea. And then on the top of that, on the other hand, you have these kind of new channels that you just described, where they would enter into treaties and not ever bring them before the Senate and the public.
Absolutely right. James Varney is a reporter at Real Clear Investigations. You got to read the whole piece that he's written about John Kerry and his jet set lifestyle, his enormous carbon footprint, and the secrecy he maintains around what he's doing. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and this segment of the show is always brought to you by the home power generating folks at ProTech Power. Make sure your loved ones are safe when the power goes out. 541 Onagen. That's 541 Onagen. Glad to be with you. Our Twitter poll today, and this one has to do with something where I'm going to run directly contrary to what most of the major media has to say about it, because I think the Republicans in Salem are doing exactly the right thing. And maybe the folks in Olympia should consider the same. They're out of session now. But when Governor Inslee says, hey, come on back for a special session on dealing with that drug problem, maybe they should tell the governor, we're going to sit this one out. Good luck coming up with a quorum. In any case, glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you're a naysayer, you know, you disagree with me or my point of view on anything, I'm glad to put you right to the head of the line. Just have your facts together and be ready for a few questions. Now, the Twitter poll today, should Republican lawmakers come back to Salem and pass anything the Democrats want? Now, I've explained this to you. I don't think the major media in Oregon does this all the time. You should know that every single statewide office in the state is filled with a Democrat. And there are majorities. In one case, a supermajority. One, the other one is a near to supermajority in the House and the Senate. So this is the way it works. If Republicans show up, the Democrats don't have to listen to a single thing they say about any laws they want to pass, like abortions for 10-year-olds, literally, like chemical castration for teenage boys, and double mastectomies for teenage girls, not even adults. They can pass that, and the Republicans don't have any input at all. All they can do is just sit there like lumps on a log because they don't have the votes. And the Democrats know that. They say, we got supermajorities. We got a Democrat in the governor's office. We don't have to listen to what you have to say. You just have to sit there so we have a quorum and we can go ahead and pass anything we want. And what the Republicans have properly pointed out is that the law in Oregon says if you're going to write legislation, it must be written in a way that the average person can understand it. And the Republicans have properly pointed out that many of the bills that are being passed right now or are proposed to be passed and sent up to Governor Kotek's desk so that she can sign them into law are not even understood by the people who wrote the laws. And I gave you the one very, very pungent example of that. A couple of weeks ago, they were having a hearing on one of the bills the Democrats have. Now, they call this, just so you understand the code words it operates under, they call it gender-affirming care and reproductive health medicine, or reproductive health services. You say, what does that mean? Well, one of the lawyers for the legislature was sitting there in front of this hearing, being asked questions by lawmakers, and one of the Republicans said, by the way, this bill would make it possible for a 10-year-old girl to get an abortion without her parents say-so and without her parents even knowing about it. And the lawyer, remember, this is a lawyer who works for the whole legislature, said, yes, that the law would allow that. Members of that committee who had been involved in proposing this law gasped. They didn't even know. They wrote a law and they didn't even know what the law could do. Now imagine that. Imagine that you as an individual, you're not a state lawmaker, I'm not a state lawmaker. You sit down and there's a piece of paper in front of you. And it's a deal to buy a car, to buy a house, to do any, start a business, whatever it is. And you sign it. And your wife says to you, or your husband says to you, what does that piece of paper say? And you say, I really don't know. It was put in front of me and I was told to sign it. So you signed it. And if your husband or wife said, do you realize that paper says, and then maybe it's something terrible for you, that that's allowed to happen? And you say, I had no idea. I signed my name to it. I had no idea what it was. Now, if you went through life that way, you might get lucky and make it through. You might find yourself signing up for all kinds of things, and you have absolutely not one clue as to what you're signing off. These are state lawmakers, Democrats, who say we're going to write laws. We don't even know the full impact of what these laws will do to the people we represent, but we're going to vote for them anyway. The abortion bill for 10-year-olds being one of them. And if you don't believe me, check the details. I mean, it was we ran the audio of the state lawmakers gasping audibly in the room, and some of the people who were shocked and stunned by what was in that proposed law, that it allowed abortions for 10-year-olds without parental knowledge or consent, they didn't know it was in there, and they were the ones proposing it. Those bills are illegal under the rules of the state legislature that says you have to be able to understand what the law says, and if you can't, it can't become a law. It's about as simple as that. So should Republican lawmakers come back to Salem, to the legislature, and then pass or allow the Democrats to pass anything they want? Now, what you're hearing in the major media, TV, to some extent radio, newspapers, they're saying, well, you know, the Republicans are refusing to do their job. You know what, folks? I'm going to tell you they are doing exactly their job. If they know that their constituents, the ones who voted for them to represent that district, do not want abortions for 10-year-olds without parental consent or notification, then they're right to walk away. If that's the only way to stop that law from becoming a law, from ending up with a signature on Tina Kotek's desk, then you know what? Their job is to walk away and not look back. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.